the misery of not being exploited. As we have seen, very little of the global labor force is employed in formal wage labor, and this number has only decreased in the wake of the 2008 crisis. The most obvious symptoms of this rising surplus population are embodied in the long-term changes in unemployment statistics. In the immediate post-war era, unemployment as low as 1 to 2% was once considered a viable goal of developed economies. During the 1950s and 60s, the UK and the United States saw unemployment hover around 2%, while Germany even saw unemployment dip below 1%. Each decade since has seen a ratcheting up of the acceptable level of unemployment, combined with decreases in employment growth. Today, the Federal Reserve considers 5.5% to be the optimal long-term unemployment rate, more than doubling the post-war levels. In the United States, the percentage of men not working has tripled since the late 1960s, and the percentage of women has also increased, despite starting at a much higher level. The proportion of people employed has dropped precipitously, and the overall surplus population has been growing consistently in recent decades. At a global level, the unemployment rate has continued to rise after the 2008 crisis, both in absolute and relative terms. The global rate of job creation has remained significantly lower, has largely generated part-time jobs, and is forecast to continue its sluggish trend. Meanwhile, labor force participation rates have been declining globally for decades, and are set to continue falling for decades more. Yet these statistics are only the tip of the iceberg. The crisis of work and the effects of surplus population are expressed not only in these direct measures, but also through a series of more subtle and indirect effects. One of these, increased precarity, has come to exemplify the neoliberal labor market in developed economies. Relative to the stable and well-paying careers of earlier generations, today's jobs typically involve more casual working hours, low and stagnant wages, decreasing job protections, and widespread insecurity. This trend towards precarity has a number of causes, but one of the primary functions of a surplus population is that it enables capitalists to place extra pressure on the lucky few who have found a job. As the surplus grows and the labor market slackens, more workers seek after fewer jobs, and power passes over to the employers. The threat of moving a factory, for instance, is only possible with a global labor glut. The result is that employers gain strength over workers and the quality of jobs decreases, supplementing the quantity measured by unemployment statistics. This is exactly what we have seen in the past few decades. Throughout Europe, the intensity of work in terms of both speed and demands has increased. The shift to just-in-time supply chains has exacerbated the demands of work, while new surveillance technologies are being forced upon laborers, in some cases even monitoring them outside of work hours. The decline in the quality of jobs can also be seen in the cutting of work hours, rather than the outright elimination of jobs. We can see this in the small but growing number of part-time, flexible, and freelance jobs over the past 30 years. For instance, the relatively low unemployment levels at the UK after the 2008 crisis are largely a result of more self-employed people living off poverty wages. In the United States, more than 6.5 million people are forced to work part-time despite desiring full-time work. This casualization also involves innovations such as crowdsourced tasks, temporary staffing agencies, and zero-hours contracts, along with the harsh working conditions and lack of benefits that accompany them. In the UK, for example, it is estimated that nearly 5% of the working population is presently on zero-hours contracts. Surplus populations have also put downward pressure on wages. Estimates suggest that every 1% increase in labor market slack is associated with a 1.6% increase in income inequality. The stagnation of real wages and the declining share of income going to labor are both tied to an excess supply of labor, and most economists believe automation and the globalization of the proletariat are central reasons why wages have been stagnant in recent decades. All of these trends have continued since the 2008 crisis as well, with slow real wage growth across the G20 and outright decline in the UK. The slow growth of wages leads precarity to also be expressed in the anxiety over high levels of consumer debt and low levels of personal savings. In the United States, for example, a full 34% of full-time workers live paycheck to paycheck, while in the UK, 35% of people could not live off their savings for more than a month. And at this most vicious, precarity is indicated by a rise in depression, anxiety, and suicides, an excess that goes uncounted in traditional economic measures. Indeed, unemployment is associated with a fifth of all global suicides, and this has only worsened in the wake of the financial crisis. In addition to precarity, surplus populations and technological automation help make sense of a recent labor market phenomenon, the emergence of jobless recoveries, in which economic growth returns after a crisis, but job growth remains anemic. Such recoveries have become standard for the U.S. economy, and since the 1990s, the trend has been toward longer and longer jobless recoveries. The current crisis is no exception, with more than 1 million full-time jobs yet to return, and forecasts suggesting that U.S. unemployment will remain above pre-crisis levels until 2024. This is a global phenomenon as well, with the world economy creating jobs so slowly that the number of jobs will remain significantly below pre-crisis levels for at least a decade. While their cause is ultimately still a mystery, jobless recoveries appear to be closely related to automation. In fact, the only occupations that have experienced jobless recoveries are those that have been under threat from automation in recent decades, semi-skilled, routine jobs. Moreover, these job losses have occurred almost entirely during and in the wake of recessions. In other words, crisis periods are when the automatable jobs disappear, never to be heard from again. If automation accelerates over the coming decades, these problems are likely to intensify, with capital using periods of crisis to permanently eliminate such jobs. The slow return of jobs also expresses itself as a rise in long-term unemployment, whereby entire groups of people become increasingly segregated from the normal labor market. Since the most recent crisis, the average length of unemployment has doubled and remains stubbornly high. These extended periods of unemployment suggest that a structural problem is responsible. That is to say, a problem that takes longer for unemployed workers to adapt to, such as retraining for an entirely new skill set. Workers laid off from an area like retail will find it difficult to immediately step into a job in growth sectors, like programming. Meanwhile, while the long-term unemployed do find a job, they're more likely to enter the margins of the job market, with lower pay and more temporary work. Jobless recoveries, in other words, exacerbate the problems of precarity, and increasingly segregate out a portion of the population as permanently underemployed. Ultimately, unemployment and the threat of it are becoming the norms for the labor force. In some urban areas, joblessness and segregation from the normal labor market have long been features of everyday existence. In the banlieues of Paris, the ghettos of the United States, and the rising spaces of suburban poverty, entire communities have been economically separated from broader economic trends, stagnating even during periods of growth. More often than not, these segregated spaces are also divided along racial lines, with deliberate neglect and outright exclusion transforming these communities into increasingly harsh areas of poor social cohesion, inadequate housing, and high unemployment. The historical origin of these spaces is well known. Racism, slavery, and the active exclusion carried out by policy choices, physical violence, and white migration. In early 20th century America, for example, the mechanism of agriculture led the rural black population to migrate and concentrate in urban areas. Yet jobs were hard to come by, as continued racism excluded them from working in textiles or manufacturing. The racialization of the surplus population also enabled owners to manipulate the white working class, keeping wages low and preventing unionization. As capitalism grew in the post-war era, manufacturing jobs eventually opened up to the black population. And by the mid-1950s, rates of black and white youth unemployment were broadly similar. But then, the globalization of the labor supply wreaked havoc on low-skilled black workers. With manufacturing jobs shipped overseas or subject to automation, these workers were disproportionately affected by deindustrialization. Industrial jobs left the urban centers and were replaced by service work, often located in distant suburban areas. The urban ghettos were left to rot, becoming concentrated hubs of long-term joblessness. They became poverty traps, devoid of jobs, with little community support and a proliferation of underground economies. Entire communities were cast aside from the machinery of capitalism and left to fend for themselves with whatever means could be scraped together. People seeking an income were forced into off-the-books work. New businesses turned to loan sharks after being denied by white-owned banks, and increasing desperation led to outright illegal activities. Mirroring the concentration of joblessness in the urban margins, developing economies have had to deal with the expansion and concentration of surplus populations in slums, favelas, and shantytowns. Globally, these have swelled to unprecedented levels as the urban workforce is tossed aside into the informal and marginal economies. As one UN report puts it, the cities have become a dumping ground for a surplus population working in unskilled, unprotected, and low-wage informal service industries and trade. The primary cause behind this expansion of slums has been primitive accumulation. Spurred on, first by colonialism and then by structural adjustment policies, the peasantry in many developing countries has been forced off their lands via global competition, rapid industrialization, and rampaging climate change. Like the earlier European experience of industrialization, dispossessed rural workers have migrated to urban areas to find jobs. And in Europe, too, this process sometimes led to slum dwelling and destitution for the new urban proletariat. But this is where the similarities end, as in Europe, the transition involved creating sufficient numbers of jobs, the emergence of a strong industrial working class, and the eventual provision of housing for migrants. Under conditions of post-colonial development, this narrative has been broken. Rather than a scarcity of labor, recent industrialization has occurred in the context of a large and global labor force. The result has been little development of anything resembling a traditional working class, continually weak job prospects, and a lack of adequate housing. New urban migrants have been left in a permanent state of transition between peasantry and proletarianization, and sometimes in seasonal circulation between rural existence and urban poverty. Slums and other impoverished housing therefore represent a dual expulsion from the land and from the formal economy. This surplus humanity, having been deprived of its traditional means of subsistence yet left without employment, has been forced to create its own non-capitalist subsistence economies. Much of the labor performed here is informal, low-paid, insecure, irregular, and without state support. In these economies, production is typically organized in non-capitalist forms, but remains directed towards commodity production, to selling goods on the market, rather than for individual use. Mediation by the market distinguishes these post-colonial subsistence economies from pre-capitalist subsistence economies, even though they both function as a desperate means of survival. But while primitive accumulation is responsible for the origins of these slums, it is premature deindustrialization that looks set to consolidate their existence. If previous periods of industrialization at least had the benefit of providing enough factory jobs for the new proletariat, premature deindustrialization threatens to eliminate this traditional pathway entirely. Technological and economic developments now enable countries to virtually leapfrog the industrialization phase, which means that developing economies are now deindustrializing at much lower rates, of per capita income and with much lower shares of manufacturing employment. China is a good example of this. With manufacturing employment in decline, labor struggles becoming more confident, real wages surging, and demographic limits leading to a focus on technological upgrading and productivity enhancements in order to maintain growth. The automation of factories is at the leading edge of this deindustrialization trend, with China already the biggest purchaser of industrial robots, and expected to soon have more industrial robots in operation than either Europe or North America. The factory of the world is going robotic. Deindustrialization can also be seen in reshoring, where manufacturing returns to developing countries in jobless, automated forms. These deindustrialization trends are taking hold across the developing economies of Latin America, Sub-Saharan Africa, and most of Asia. Even in countries where manufacturing employment has increased in absolute terms, there have been significant decreases in the labor intensity of the process. The result of all this is not only an incomplete transition to a significant working class, but also the stymieing of the expected employment path for the workforce. Premature deindustrialization is leaving most of the world's urban proletariat dispossessed of its agricultural livelihood and without the opportunity to be hired for manufacturing jobs. Some hold out the hope that an emerging service sector will absorb the surplus populations, yet this appears increasingly unlikely. Even in India, the center of service and high-tech outsourcing, only a small portion of the labor force works in the information and communication technology sector. More importantly, the potential of service jobs is constrained by the newest wave of automation, which is likely to eliminate the low-skilled, low-wage service jobs that have traditionally been outsourced. Clerical work, call center work, or data entry, for example. As this non-routine cognitive labor is increasingly automated, what may occur is a premature shift away from the service-based economy on top of premature deindustrialization. What this means is that the maintenance of large portions of humanity within slums and informal non-capitalist economies is likely to be consolidated by emerging technological trends. In the end, while unemployment measures give us some sense of the size of the surplus population problem, it is precarity, jobless recoveries, and mass urban marginality that truly express the squeeze on the global labor market.